Hello and welcome back to The Power of Now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment with Gilda and Barbara. We're doing a book study on this book written by Eckhart Tolle, and we hope you have your copy so that you can follow along. Today we are in the very last section of the last chapter, chapter 10, section 8, The Meaning of Surrender, The Power to Choose. My name is Barbara Wiener, and I'm here with Gilda C. Monet. Welcome, Gilda.
Thank you.
It's great to be here. And it's an interesting feeling knowing that we're on the last chapter and the last section of this book. And this is the second time that we've actually been through the entire book. And so it's just a very interesting feeling. Anyway, the power to choose. A student asks, what about all those people who, it seems, actually want to suffer? I have a friend whose partner is physically abusive toward her, and her previous relationship was of a similar kind. Why does she choose such men? And why is she refusing to get out of that situation now? Why do so many people actually choose pain? And Eckhart responds, I know that the word choose is a favorite New Age term, but it isn't entirely accurate in this context. It is misleading to say that somebody chose a dysfunctional relationship or any other negative situation in his or her life. Choice implies consciousness, a high degree of consciousness. Without it, you have no choice. Choice begins the moment you disidentify from the mind and its conditioned patterns, the moment you become present. Until you reach that point, you are unconscious, spiritually speaking. This means that you are compelled to think, feel, and act in certain ways according to the conditioning of your mind. That is why Jesus said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." This is not related to intelligence in the conventional sense of the word. I have met many highly intelligent and educated people who are also completely unconscious, which is to say, completely identified with their mind. In fact, if mental development and increased knowledge are not counterbalanced by a corresponding growth in consciousness, the potential for unhappiness and disaster is very great.
Your friend is stuck in a relationship with an abusive partner, and not for the first time. Why? No choice. The mind, conditioned as it is by the past, always seeks to recreate what it knows and is familiar with, even if it is painful. At least it's familiar. The mind always adheres to the known. The unknown is dangerous because it has no control over it. That's why the mind dislikes and ignores the present moment. Present moment awareness creates a gap not only in the stream of mind, but also in the past-future continuum. Nothing truly new and creative can come into this world except through that gap, that clear space of infinite possibility.
Well, just to back up and comment about where he said, I've met many highly intelligent and educated people who are also completely unconscious. I also have met many very smart people that were so identified with their mind that their ego was so strong that you really couldn't have a compassionate conversation with them because the ego is always in survival mode, trying to be better than, Or I am, saying to the person, I am better than. And so if they're always one-upping, then they are never on an equal playing field. And they could never be compassionate in that regard because the ego won't let them.
Yep. I have nothing to add, but it's true.
And I also really like what he said about nothing truly new and creative can come into this world except through the clear space of infinite possibility, the present moment, the now, when you're not tapped into what already happened and when you're not tapped into, oh my gosh, what is going to happen? And you're fully present, you're fully here in the now. That's when you can tap into all that is. The abundance of source energy and get really clear on what it is you're asking for or about. Sometimes in the past, I've asked for answers about something and I've done it right before I've gone to sleep at night where the egoic mind is disconnecting and we're getting tuned in and tapped in to that space, that infinite space. And in the morning when I wake up, the answer that I was looking for is right there, present in my mind. So I know about that clear space of infinite possibility. And there's so many different ways that you can tap into it. I just mentioned one, but through meditation, through getting really still, through stepping out into nature and being very present. There's a lot of different ways that you can tap into and become very present and get into that space where you can be super creative. So your friend, being identified with her mind, may be recreating a pattern learned in the past in which intimacy and abuse are inseparably linked. Alternatively, she may be acting out a mind pattern learned early in childhood, according to which she is unworthy and deserves to be punished. It is possible, too, that she lives a large part of her life through the pain body, which always seeks more pain on which to feed. Her partner has his own unconscious patterns, which complement hers. Of course, her situation is self-created, but who or what is the self that is doing the creating? A mental emotional pattern from the past. No more. Why make a self out of it? If you tell her that she's chosen her condition or situation, you are reinforcing her state of mind identification. But is her mind pattern who she is? Is it herself? Is it her true identity derived from the past? Show your friend how to be the observing presence behind her thoughts and her emotions. Tell her about the pain body and how to free herself from it. Teach her the art of inner body awareness. Demonstrate to her the meaning of presence. As soon as she is able to access the power of the now and thereby break through her conditioned past, she will have a choice.
Nobody chooses dysfunction, conflict, pain. Nobody chooses insanity. They happen because there's not enough presence in you to dissolve the past. Not enough light to dispel the darkness. You are not fully here. You have not quite woken up yet. In the meantime, the conditioned mind is running your life.
I think this is super important that he's pointing out the conditioning that we receive. And Dr. Bruce Lipton talks about that conditioning occurring from the time that we're 0 until we're 8. Because in those years, we really don't have a logic-based mind where we're analyzing. The conditioned mind is running your life. Well, Dr. Bruce Lipton says that 95% of the day, our subconscious mind is running our life and our thoughts. We might have to do things like pay bills, and maybe we can become present for 5% of the day. The other 95%, our subconscious mind is in charge. Or, as he says, the conditioned mind is running your life. To change that, we need to reprogram the subconscious mind to be in alignment with where the creative conscious mind wants to go. And to do that is not difficult. I teach people how to do that in our coaching class. So Wainwright Global Certified Professional Coaches know how to create what we call a vision statement that will help you to reprogram that conditioned mind to be in alignment with where you want to go. So 95% of the day, your subconscious mind will be manifesting and working toward what it is that you really, really want in life. Similarly, if you are one of the many people who have an issue with their parents, if you still harbor resentment about something they did or did not do, then you still believe that they had a choice, that they could have acted differently. It always looks as if people had a choice, but that is an illusion. As long as your mind, with its conditioned patterns, runs your life, as long as you are your mind, what choice do you have? None. You are not even there. The mind-identified state is severely dysfunctional. It is a form of insanity. Almost everyone is suffering from this illness in varying degrees. The moment you realize this, there can be no more resentment. How can you resent someone's illness? The only appropriate response is compassion.
So that means nobody's responsible for what they do? I don't like that idea. And Eckhart says, if you are run by your mind, although you have no choice, you will still suffer the consequences of your unconsciousness, and you will create further suffering. You will bear the burden of fear, conflict, problems, and pain. The suffering thus created will eventually force you out of your unconscious state.
Which makes it sound like, if you're suffering, that is a way to get you to the present moment. I think that's true if you aren't, call it self-medicating, drinking alcohol, using other substances to change your state, then the suffering might bring you present. But I don't think it will if you are using alternative methods to distract yourself from the present moment and what you're actually feeling. And I believe there's a great healing opportunity when you are suffering to become very present and heal yourself, to fill that hole that's inside of you, or whatever it is that's disturbing you, disturbing your peace of mind, your peace of heart, whatever that is. If you bring yourself fully present and focus all your attention on it, you can transmute it right out of your system, right out of your body, right out of your life. And you can become whole and complete within. A student says, what you say about choice also applies to forgiveness, I suppose. You need to be fully conscious and surrender before you can forgive. And Eckhart says, forgiveness is a term that has been in use for 2,000 years, but most people have a very limited view of what it means. You cannot truly forgive yourself or others as long as you derive your sense of self from the past. Only through accessing the power of now, which is your own power, Can there be true forgiveness? This renders the past powerless, and you realize deeply that nothing you ever did or that was ever done to you could touch, even in the slightest, the radiant essence of who you are. The whole concept of forgiveness then becomes unnecessary. I don't know if I agree with it, forgiveness becomes unnecessary, but I do believe that it's easy to forgive somebody when you recognize that it is all part of the magnificent school of learning that we are all experiencing and taking a part in. And without all the players, be they evil or good, we wouldn't be able to learn. If there wasn't somebody hurting us and we hadn't gone through that pain, would we have compassion for somebody else? Maybe, maybe not.
A student asks, and how do I get to that point of realization? And Eckhart says, when you surrender to what is, and so become fully present, the past ceases to have any power. You do not need it anymore. Presence is the key. The now is the key.
I love that. When you surrender to what is by becoming fully present, the past ceases to have any power. And you know, I know so many people that are, I'll call it, owned by their past. You know, this happened to me, and that guy's a jerk, and this person, you know, betrayed me, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that happened. But you don't have to give it any power. If you're fully present, you don't need it anymore.
I know that sometimes my past likes to come and haunt me. But then I remember something that Eckhart said, where it's like, you know, are you sitting down or are you laying down? Like, are you safe? Like laying in your bed? So I, you know, like when my past does come to haunt me, I just kind of sit here and remind myself that like I am safe and like everything's fine and everything's all right. But then once my mind starts to wander, it's like, oh, and then I have to like bring myself back to the present moment by, you know, like reminding myself, like, you know, I'm breathing, and then I start focusing on my inner body and all that stuff. And then you take your power back that way.
That's excellent.
Sometimes I get like a glass of cold water, and then I just take like a nice big gulp, but then I slowly like swallow it, and I focus on like the chill that's like going down my esophagus, and it goes down so slowly, but that helps you kind of stay present too, because you, I guess, have something to focus on.
That makes a whole lot of sense. So you're really tuning into your physical inner body.
Right.
Love it. I love it. How will I know when I have surrendered? Asks the student. And Eckhart responds, when you no longer need to ask the question.
I feel like that's true, because when you surrender, you kind of don't really mind what happens anymore, because you've kind of given up control.
Yeah. And you realize that the universe is perfect, and the universe is conspiring on our behalf to create exactly what it is that we either want to experience, that's if you have a vision statement, or what you need to experience to get you to the state in which you are ready to surrender and be at peace and get into the now. Well, since we are at the end of the last chapter, last section, and last sentence, I think it would be great if in our next session we randomly access different parts of the book. And what I found before in the past is when things are going on in my life and I'm looking for an answer, If I randomly open the book and stick my finger in at a page or a section, I hear exactly what it is that I needed to hear. So maybe that would be the way to continue these episodes of The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment. What are your thoughts, Gilda?
I think that it could be fun until we figure out our next venture.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. Until next week, everyone. I trust you're having a great week and we'll see you next time. Bye now.
Bye.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to go deeper into a spiritual conversation, you can join our Facebook group, The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment with Gilda and Barbara. Or you can contribute by going to wainwrightglobal.com/go/support.